This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The friends Nolan Wells went to Horn Island with came back without him. And when the sheriff of Jackson County, Mississippi, was asked how an 18-year-old ends up alone on an uninhabited island about 10 miles off into the Gulf, the answer was that the young man had chosen to stay. From what we understand, Sheriff John Ledbetter said he chose to stay there. That's, as of this recording, the official explanation. He chose to stay. This was a young man who graduated from Ocean Springs High School and went to play college football as a wide receiver. He appeared to be the only person of color in the photograph of that boat trip, the one that's traveled everywhere since. And the story is that he chose to stay behind alone on an island with no houses and no way back except the boat that had already left. There's one document that could tell us how Nolan Wells actually ended up in the water. It's the autopsy. The state has finished it, and the cause of death and the toxicology haven't been released yet. That is still ongoing, at least as of this recording. So follow the logic, because it matters. The people who've already decided this was murder don't have an autopsy. The people who've already decided this was a simple drowning and that everyone else needs to calm down don't have an autopsy either. Nobody arguing about how Nolan Wells died actually knows how Nolan Wells died. A single piece of paper that answers the question is sitting sealed or is not yet even completed, and the verdicts are coming in anyway from both angles. The outline of what happened is just about all anyone has. So let's start there. On the 4th of July, Nolan Wells went out on a boat with a group of friends to Horn Island, an undeveloped barrier island about 10 miles off the Mississippi coast, south of Ocean Springs. People go there for the beaches on the northwest tip. The group of friends there that he went with, they all went and had fun. He didn't come back on the boat with them after the fun, though, allegedly. He was reported missing. And after a search by local, state, and federal teams and a lot of volunteers, a park ranger found his body on July 6 off that same northwest tip of the island. When the official account of a death is that thin, he chose to stay. We're looking into it. People don't wait for more. They build their own account. And in this case, they've built two of them, and the two are now at war with each other. This take and that take. Before any of that, though, is a fact that has nothing to do with race and everything to do with competence. A friend of Nolan's called the Coast Guard around 11 o'clock on the night of the 4th. The people whose job it was to send the boats and the aircraft, well, they got around to asking them around lunch next day to go on out. Hey, you know, we got that call late last night. Maybe we should go look. Roughly 13 hours with a teenager missing on an island in open water in the dark. And the machine that's supposed to move didn't move. So there's that nugget over here. That delay is where the vacuum comes in. This is the same fight that breaks out every time a body turns up and the answers don't come fast enough. When a system is slow and a system is quiet, people don't read that as neutral. They read it as a signal, and they pour a theory into silence because a theory feels better than a shrug. Look at the Nancy Guthrie case. The sheriff hasn't even said publicly whether the water off that part of the island is considered dangerous. A Google search will tell you that, though, and it is. Or whether swimmers are warned away from it. Why did he separate from the group? Why was he found without his phone? Every one of those blanks becomes proof of whatever you believed before you showed up. And the official language didn't help anything. Early on, the sheriff's office put out a statement saying no foul play was suspected. That very one phrase did more to fuel the cover-up theory than anything the friends said or didn't say, because the coroner had actually said something narrower, that there was no immediate obvious signs of trauma on the body, and then asked for a full state autopsy exactly because the circumstances were uncertain. Cross the T's, dot the I's. That's good. No obvious signs at first glance isn't the same as case closed. Nothing happened. No, it's, well, here's initially what we have, but we ain't done yet. But that's how no foul play landed. And once a phrase like that is loose, you don't get it back. There are two theories, and plenty of people want to be told the two camps behind them are the same. They are not. The camp looked at the photograph, looked at the geography, looked at the history of the state, and decided Nolan Wells was murdered. The other camp looked at the attorneys and the cameras and the marches and decided this was an ordinary accident and everyone should stop talking about it. Those two positions aren't mirror images of each other. One camp is demanding more investigation. The other camp is saying, demanding less, I guess you could say. And in Mississippi, of all places, demanding less scrutiny isn't the calm, sober, grown-up posture it imagines itself to be. The whole reason this death carries the weight it carries is this is the state that has a long, documented record of looking away from details exactly like this one. So the crowd insisting there's nothing to see here, move along, isn't the neutral party in the room. It's the crowd repeating the oldest mistake the state has ever made. And the questions the family is asking aren't manufactured. Crump has pointed out that Nolan knew how to swim, and he was a conditioned athlete. One of the volunteer searchers from the group called the United Cajun Navy said out loud what a lot of people are thinking. If a strong young man got into trouble in that water, how did the people around him not notice? And they're fair questions. They don't prove anybody did anything, but they're exactly the kind of questions the everyone calm down camp keeps trying to bat away. And questions like that don't just disappear because they're inconvenient. Although it is important to note, you can be Superman. And if you get caught in a riptide, and there appears to be a lot of them by this island, it is the ocean, it'll take you. It don't care what color your skin is. It don't care how good of an athlete you are. It's a dangerous body of water, bar none. So context and simple facts like here's how riptides work are important to the conversation, not just someone's conjecture. He's a strong swimmer. Great. There's a riptide. He's also human. None of that means the ordinary explanation is impossible. On the Mississippi coast, boat trips out to those barrier islands are a completely normal way to spend a holiday. People swim there. Accidents in open water happen to strong swimmers, and they happen fast, and they happen all the time. And they happen quiet. Most drownings happen quiet. They don't happen, oh, God, he's out there in the water. They happen, hey, where's Nolan? That's how most drownings happen. If the autopsy comes back and says Nolan was drowned, that's not a cover story. It's not a betrayal. It's a fact, and it deserves the same respect as any other fact. The point isn't that one theory is right. The point is that neither side actually knows yet. And yet, earned distrust still isn't the same thing as a proven claim. Nolan's family has hired attorney Ben Crump, and Crump said publicly there was an altercation on that boat. That's an allegation. It hasn't been established as fact. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office has asked anyone who is near that tip of the island to hand over original unedited photos and videos, and specifically anything showing alleged altercations. Alleged. Nobody has shown the public an altercation. It's been described, and describing something isn't the same as proving it happened. And keep in mind, I will say this too about conspiracies or cover-ups. Very hard to keep one under wraps when you have a large group of people involved, a large group of teenagers who are drinking involved. The idea that they're all making a pact, okay, nobody's going to say anything about our friend that they all loved and had grown up with. We just all be like, oh, okay, let's just not tell any. I mean, it'd be a hard sell in a movie. It's an even harder sell in reality. Could it be? Sure. Anything is a possibility. That's the point here. We just don't know. And when we just don't know, we like to fill in facts. We like to fill in facts. We like to fill in information, I should say, not facts. We like to fill in blanks where we think facts should be. Based on our history, based on the narratives that we believe, based on so many factors. So the place where the two camps actually meet isn't, in the beginning, equally wrong. One of them started from a reasonable place and one of them didn't. Both of them have done the identical thing. Both of them stopped looking. Both of them swapped out finding the answer for already having the answer. And in a case where the central fact, how this young man ended up in that water, is still genuinely unknown, the one thing nobody can afford to do is stop looking. Questions need to be asked, which brings up the question sitting underneath it all. Why won't a big part of the country just accept the official reassurance? The commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety, Sean Tyndall, went on radio and said there's no indication there was anything regarding race in this. And he might be right, but a huge number of people, to answer that question, why won't people just accept that? There's a good damn reason for it. A huge number of people heard that sentence and didn't believe it for a second. That reaction isn't irrational. It's memory. In 1955, a 14-year-old man named Emmett Till was murdered in Mississippi. An all-white jury acquitted the two men who did it. After about an hour of deliberating, those men confessed to a magazine the next year, shielded from a second trial by double jeopardy, and neither of them ever spent a single day in prison for it. And if that feels safely sealed off in the distant past, the United States Department of Justice didn't formally close the Emmett Till case until December of 2021. Yeah. Systematic racism is still alive and well. It's not 1960 anymore, but it took till 2021 for Mississippi to say, you know, In 1963, Medgar Evans, a civil rights leader, was shot in his own delivery, or in his own driveway in Jackson, in front of his family. His killer's fingerprint was on the rifle, and it still took 31 years and three trials before the state managed to convict the man. So there's a track record here. It's not crazy for people to be a little cautious about trusting authorities in Mississippi to do anything correctly when it comes to a case like this. That's not a ridiculous position to take. That's why the suspicion in the Wells case is reasonable. Even if it turns out unfounded, the suspicion is reasonable. It doesn't mean it's fact. It doesn't mean it's accurate. But it means more questions need to be asked and more questions need to be answered because of said history. And just saying, well, that was a long time ago, move on. No. That's not how this game works. When a state spends decades proving it won't investigate the deaths of its black citizens with the same seriousness it brings to everybody else, it doesn't get the benefit of the doubt on day one. And there's a lot of things that are not adding up here. And that's the problem when you think about the history of Mississippi. And it's history. But history earns the question. It doesn't supply the answer. Emmett Till and Medgar Evans are the reason to investigate this death all the way to the bottom. and let nobody quietly file it away in a drawer. They are not proof that these particular men, young men, did anything wrong to Nolan Wells. Taking a real and terrible history of injustice and using it to convict strangers you've never met before any evidence is in isn't the opposite of that history. It's the same shortcut wearing better clothes. It's deciding you already know based on the group a person belongs to. That's the exact machine that killed Emmett Till. And aiming it in a direction that feels righteous doesn't turn it into a different machine. Go back to those 13 hours for a second. A slow, indifferent response from a small county sheriff's office to a missing black teenager is a real thing and a damning thing. And it deserves to be looked at all on its own. But indifference isn't the same as a cover-up. A department that didn't hurry isn't automatically a department hiding a murder. And for what it's worth, the sheriff has said the investigation is active and ongoing. That is his that his people have done witness interviews, and they've been working with the FBI. The machine is moving. Collapsing those two ideas, treating slowness as proof of conspiracy, is exactly the move that lets people wave away the whole complaint, including the part of it that is completely legitimate. And that's what the loudest voices on both sides are doing in this case. They're not fighting for Nolan Wells. They're using him. Most of the people with the loudest verdicts have never set foot on Horn Island and never met Nolan Wells, the dead 18-year-old. Has now been turned into a stage for many. And the show is about who can be louder than the other side, who can plant a flag harder, who can win the point in front of an audience. Every ounce of energy that goes into being right on the internet is an ounce that doesn't go into the only thing that actually matters, which is figuring out what happened on that island. And it carries a cost that isn't theoretical. Reporting on the case says young people who were on Horn Island that day are scared to speak, scared that if they describe what they saw, they'll get investigated or hauled in front of cameras or cast as the villain in somebody's post, even if they're just describing really nothing of any note. The people most likely to actually know something are going quiet because the noise has made telling the truth feel dangerous. The louder this whole thing gets, the further the truth runs from everybody chasing it. One of Nolan's own friends said the thing out loud that half of the internet has forgotten how to say. He said, let the investigation happen and let the facts come out. If the facts show somebody hurt Nolan, he wants justice. If it turns out to be a tragic accident that somebody was too scared to speak up about, he still wants justice. Either way, he said, the facts are the only thing that settles it. That's a kid who lost his friend. And he's more clear-headed about this than the adults screaming at each other online, which brings it back to that sealed autopsy. It is still sealed as of this recording. Crumpy said the family ordered a second independent autopsy of their own because they don't accept that Nolan drowned by accident. The results of that one haven't come back yet either. So the one piece of evidence that could settle this has quietly split again into two versions, and the public hasn't seen either one. And everybody's still certain. That's the whole sickness of this thing in a single picture. Total certainty stacked on top of a question that hasn't been answered. Don't build your house on quicksand. Underneath all of it is Nolan Wells, an actual person. The night before the boat trip, he cooked his family dinner. He made them salmon. And he left to spend the holiday weekend with his friends. He was a college athlete who, by every account from the people who knew him, had his whole life in front of him. His mother has asked more than once that any marches held in his name stay peaceful because she says that's who her son was. The district attorney has said she'll take the findings to a grand jury to decide whether anybody committed a crime. The only thing that honors him is the truth. And the truth is something you find, not something you decide. You don't get there from a photograph. You don't get there from a hunch about what people like that you like you would do. You don't get there from whichever segment or whichever thread made you angrier. You get there from an autopsy, from the toxicology, from the unedited video, from the witness, if they're ever allowed to speak without getting torn to pieces for it. His parents are asking for the same thing every loud voice out there claims to want: answers. They're standing in the middle of everybody else's certainty, and they're really asking is for somebody to tell them What happened to their son? Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue our conversation there, and we will continue to follow this case wherever it may go. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
An 18-year-old takes a boat out to Horn Island on the 4th of July, along with about 300 other people. A lot of them kids he grew up with in Ocean Springs, teenagers, young people out doing what young people do. 2 days later, a park ranger finds his body in the water off the northwestern tip of that very island. The friends came home. Nolan didn't. And almost every message we've gotten comes down to one question. How do you leave somebody's child on an island 10 miles from shore? That's the big one. Today, we're going to go through your questions, so be sure to drop them in the comments as we're doing this live. And if you're catching this after we air it, drop your questions there, too. We read them all throughout the day, and we will try to address them here as we work through the story as we continue to cover it. The links are in the description, Substack, YouTube, some of the best places to do it. If you're watching us live, X, Facebook, all that. Let us know your thoughts. Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program with us. As always, not a lot over the weekend. There is going to be some movement on this week, without a doubt. We're likely to see possibly the autopsy results. There's a grand jury convening. That doesn't mean something criminal is happening here. It just means that's how they look at any sort of case where there's some questions involved. So there's going to be some pivotal things likely happening this week. I'm not going to speculate on those yet because we just don't know. They could go any which way. Mm-hmm. We'll follow them wherever they go. I want to address some of the questions that are still out there and really kind of just parse through them, because it's easy in this case. The more I talk about it, the more I'm digging. It is easy to get onto one train and start riding it this way. And you go, whoa, wait a second. Let me jump over here and see it this way. Oh, okay. You're making a lot of sense too. But they're both going very divergently different ways. But if you really look at both of them, there's certainly valid questions on every side of this and valid thoughts on every side of this. The problem is we just don't know the answers. Mm-hmm. I keep coming and thinking about the boat ride home. A lot of people are. Somebody looked around. Somebody saw he wasn't there. And that's not even a question. From what we understand, the boys were under the understanding, again, according to them, that's, if we're going off of what that story is, that they were told, he said, I'm going to go get a ride back. I'm going to go after this girl over there. Even if Nolan said he'd catch another ride, everyone, parents, lots of people who weren't there saying, you don't just leave. You just don't. Well, you just, and all that, whatever. So why did every single one of them go? Why did they leave their friend back on the island? I think I have some pretty simple answers for it. I'm curious as to what your answer is for it.
So you said a lot of great things, as you always do, Tony. So valid questions, but we need to always maintain openness to conclusions because we just don't have all the facts and data yet. But on that question about leaving behind, let's go down the road of thought experiments with human behavior, because mm-hmm. it's easy, like you said, to go down these different paths. Because how do we go down different paths? So we take a starting point and we start filling in details about what we think we would do in hindsight with 2020 without ever having to experience that ourselves. And what I mean by that is the first time you go through a truly fear-motivated moment, you don't know what you're going to do until you move through that fear-motivated moment. You reflect, you say what I would do differently next time, and then you get a rep, and then you do it differently next time. I know this. Every single first responder out there knows this. You know, the first time a cop pulls up to his first car stop and things look a little different than he's facing in training, I can tell you fear hits them about what's this going to do? What's this person doing? Why does this person pull over to the side of the road this way? Until you start establishing a pattern behavior, and that fear is no longer fear, it becomes experience. 9/11 in New York, I watched people jump from the North Tower. I saw people running in chaos. I had management telling me, if you fear for your life, run, because they didn't have a rep in dealing with chaos yet. So when chaos hits, fear hits, and people respond to fight or flight, and they're always going to act in their own best interest in terms of their safety, security, and prosperity from their own point of view, from their own experiences in those moments. I use that as the backdrop to the facts that I see, that we're seeing so far, is we are seeing no significant wobbles in relationships, because I go to relationships first. We're seeing friends. We use those words friends because these people cared for him. There's no leakage saying that there's some strife, there's some animosity. Now, granted, there's some back and forth. We're seeing some fight here, an argument here, or whatnot, but we're not seeing any precursors before this, like he's on a boat with an arch enemy or a frenemy or anything like that, because if we did, there'd be more data to go on. What happens, though, is, and especially when we listen to the call and we got the data and the GPS of not just a leak in a boat, they, from my optic, if you want to go glass half full, that these is just a horrendous, tragic event. If they feared for their boat sinking, they feared for their lives, you become extremely tunnel vision if this is your first rep in doing something like that. And what happens when you get tunnel vision, people, places, and things kind of drop off. And it's easy for our brain to rationalize, oh, they said this, so I don't have to worry about that, so I'm going to focus on this. Mm-hmm. And this is what we might be seeing here as one possible route going down. I cannot wait for us all to get the results of the autopsy. Yeah. To verify, hopefully verify for everyone, for the parents, all the other people involved, that it was a tragic drowning, an accident, and that hopefully the independent autopsy that the family is doing is going to be congruent with that, because that would be the thing I think brings everyone the greatest peace to be able to move through this tragic event, but only time will tell.
That autopsy, and both autopsies, is I'm hopefully they line up and that they're, you know, congruent with each other. If they're not, I think that's going to cause more chaos.
Yep.
It will be what it will be. The Coast Guard call I want to hear, which we have not heard yet, that was the one where the Coast Guard waited 13 hours for going out. I'm not the Coast Guard. I don't know how that stuff works. As a layperson, I go, you get a call and there's a missing kid on the island and you're 13 hours later, you go out? Like, what the hell is that all about? Maybe there's a reason. Maybe they get these calls all the time and it's like, well, it turns out 98% of the time it's somebody's on the island or they just didn't hear from their friend or they're drunk or who knows? Is that reason enough not to go out because 98% of the time it goes this way? I don't know. Again, all of that 100% conjecture from my brain that I just spilled out there.
Right.
But we just don't know the answer. So I'd like to know that. Not that I think the Coast Guard is like conspiring with anybody, but I think that might be a question of response and how that is handled. And maybe that should be examined. Maybe it shouldn't. I don't know the answer.
And how many other calls were coming in at the same time, too? All the data we don't have yet.
All of that needs to come in. There's questions there. What we're not seeing, I think, tells us a lot. Again, my conjecture on this, not that it's worth anybody more than anybody else's, but the way that some of this is being painted, and there seems to be this absolute certainty from some that this was some sort of racially motivated attack from his friends. I mean, if you look at some comments, you'd think he went out with a Klan for a day on the water. It's like, no, that does not appear to be this whatsoever. Right. These friends, many of them of all races, have said, we're a pretty diverse group of kids, as most groups of kids are these days, in almost any part of the country. If you haven't seen high schools as of the last 20 some years. And the issue of race, not as big of a deal as it's been to generations 20, 30, 40 or more their peers, because there is so much more intermingling of everybody, which is a wonderful thing. So it's not this oh, this against that. I mean, because a good chunk of everybody's a little bit of everything in many cases, which I think is wonderful. So this idea that this is some sort of racially motivated thing, okay, if there was, let's just go down the road of if there was, if it is, and again, I don't know the answer to that. Could it be? Sure, anything is possible right now. But if it was, if there was a track record, if there was enough here that this group of friends decided for whatever reason they're going to kill their black friend, And then everyone's going to lie about it and not talk about it. Wouldn't you likely see some sort of, number one, leakage on that? It's a group of people. But number two, leading up to this, I would imagine at this point in time, we're talking 2 weeks out since this occurred, and teenagers with phones and everybody who records every damn thing in the world, you don't think if there would be 1,000 videos out there of these friends doing nasty things to their black friend or saying things on camera, that there would be a track record of this if it existed? I would think that would have come out by now, or there'd be some leakage of it somewhere. We've seen nothing of the sort. So that's where I'm going to, is what we're not seeing is telling me, at least in my gut at this moment, that these friends are probably telling the truth, that they don't know what the hell happened to their friend. And they're more heartbroken than anybody else, because this is their actual friend. We're people on the outside. And if that's true and they lost their friend and they don't know what the hell's going on and the world's going, you might have something to do with this. My God. I can't imagine what that's like. Now, look, I'm saying it could go any which way, but if we're looking at it from that perspective, what we're not seeing seems to be pretty loud here.
Yeah, and I agree. So things like racism aren't one-offs. You know, if there was a racially motivated intent here, there would have, like you said, there would have been leakage before, there'd be leakage after, there'd be, and again, that's just from what we're seeing in social media. It's what we're seeing being portrayed right now. So
could be wrong.
And if we see text messages and things come out after they do the digital forensics on this, and it supports another conclusion, okay, then we take that in and we shift.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I don't see it. I go past as prologue. If you're not seeing it in the past, the likelihood of it being present today is—it's always a maybe, but it's very, very slim. Now, and you brought up the parents on this. Well, actually, one of the listeners did. Yeah, absolutely. Because so the parents are different generation, more like our generation or yours, Tony. Maybe not up to mine yet. But again, generational things are different, and so they don't live the daily life with their son. They don't know. Like, I'm very aware of my kids' friends. My kids are adults. But I wasn't as granular on it about the words, action, the deeds of their friends. I just had a general tenor of them and how they got along, the types of relationship they had. And so if you're a parent and you went through, especially in Mississippi, some racially trying times, no doubt, would you want to ensure that this wasn't a thing? Absolutely, yeah. You would. I don't fault anyone for anyone's actions so far on anything. I think the public's getting a little more hyperbole without, because they're jumping to, they're filling in gaps, in other words.
And that seems to be like the dangerous thing with all of it, is that part. I in no way fault invest. You ask the freaking questions. Mississippi's got the worst track record of our country of covering up horrible things done to black people, without a doubt. I mean, it was like 2023, one of the cases recently. I just did a piece on this the other day where it was like finally like recognized that it was wrong. It was like, it took up until like 5 years ago to like recognize. I mean, it's insane. It's utterly insane. So is it wrong to examine it from that angle? Not at all. Please do.
Yep.
Examine it till the nth degree to make sure. But investigating it and asking the questions is not the same as it is that. Yep. And that you're going to get to the, you can't go into that going, I'm going to ask these questions and here's where I know it's going to land. No, you don't know where it's going to land. That's why you're asking the questions. And it's good to be asking the questions. The problem is when the public is going, I know how it should land, how I want it to land, how my conjecture feels like, because that's going to elevate me and my posturing to the world of me being, whatever the hell they want to be over others. That's the scary part with something like this, because it seems to stir up, the least critical thinkers of our population.
Yeah, it's what we do. I mean, you start seeing patterns of behavior that will support the conclusion you've already come to. And that's why, again, going to your very first thing, I wrote it down, valid questions, but not coming up with any kind of conclusions until you keep taking in data. And you can got to keep going down the road of maybe. You don't rule anything out. But as of right now, as of everything we're seeing a lot of congruency with a group of good friends that made some tragic choices on a day that I think they don't want to relive. And so the rep that they got out of this, so seriously, do you really think any one of these individuals involved would ever do anything to leave someone behind in any aspect of their life again?
No. I mean,
and so it's a horrible way to get a life rep, but everyone has been not self-centered in this. They've been focused on the victim. They've been focused on the victim's family, and they're taking a lot of threats. It's really tragic, sad, but unfortunately not unexpected from what we see on a lot of these cases.
I know. I mean, it's any way you look at it, it's just, it's horrendous. Another question here. It says, my son is 19, swims like a fish, and I haven't slept right since I heard the story. Nolan was a college football player, young, strong, healthy. Everyone keeps saying drowning like that explains... everyone keeps saying drowning like that word explains everything. Does that sit right with anybody? Basically, how does this happen? Well, riptides. I mean, how did he get out to the riptide? I don't know. We don't know the answer to that question. But the thing is, once you're in one, you're kind of screwed. And it doesn't really matter how young, strong, and healthy you are.
Yeah, and when it comes to swimming, I speak from a lot of experience on this. I am a swimmer.
Yeah,
you
are. I
swim every day. And I swim every day. I it's not a me moment. Triathlons, long distance swimming. And we have a group at the YMCA, a group of very, very healthy, fit people that are new triathletes, new boxers. I mean, boxers, you can't get more fit than a boxer in a lot of these things. And I watch people that look just like Nolan, his fitness level from football and everything else, come in and sink like rocks. I'm trying to remember what channel I watched this on. This was actually recently, I think it was on Discovery, where they actually ran a competition to see, to demonstrate how hard it is, the difference between swimming in a pool, and they had a bunch of people, they had a dancer, I think, a ballet dancer, they had a football player, and all these different young 20-somethings get in a pool and try to do 100 yards. They struggled, extremely fit 20-year-olds struggled to do that. Then they said, all right, now you're going to go do the same distance in the open ocean. They all had to be picked up but one. And so it's hugely different. Just because you're fit doesn't mean you're fit to swim. There's a huge difference between swimming, and especially if now you throw in 4 to 5 mile an hour riptide, which the research I did the other day shows that it can get that fast out there, which is faster than a regular human being can swim. And then a regular human being that isn't a seasoned swimmer that does it every single day cannot maintain that kind of pace probably for more than about 5 minutes. Seriously, and if you don't think I'm right on this, go in a pool, go to your local YMCA. If you're not a swimmer, see how long you can actually do a lap and keep yourself afloat for. And so it does not surprise me that he was overcome by water if we don't see any of the data points, because you can be as fit as you want to be in the world, but if you're not a swimmer and you're caught in a riptide, you can be seriously in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, it happens very, very fast. How he got back out in the water is the question. Here's what I've been kind of wondering. This is what was going to my mind over the weekend and talking about this. So he tells the girl allegedly that he's going to go get a ride back with his guy friends. Tells his guy friends allegedly that he's going to go hang out with the girl. Can both be true at the same time? I think they might be able to be true at the same time. I could see it like him telling his friends, I'm going to go hang out with a girl. Gets out with the girl, and maybe I need that ride back, and the boat's gone. I don't know. There's a lot of ways in real life how this could go down that aren't just the choose-your-own-adventure book, and it's this or that. It's somewhere choose in the gray adventure. Area.
I like it. Yeah, you're
and,
right.
And it's not, you know, it's not what he was intending either, but somehow he ends up on the island without a ride back. And who knows what happens after that? I'm not so much suspicious of the group of friends that has no track record of anything negative against their friend at all. I'm wondering, who did he meet on the island? Right. I'd be looking more in that lane. And we haven't really heard much about that lane other than the girl that he was interested in. If we're going to go down a road of people being involved here, I would be wondering, what group of strangers might he have gotten involved with that I don't know, maybe didn't feel the same way about someone of his race as his own friends did, which his own friends seem to, you know, everybody's okay, everybody's good, everybody's equal and on the same footing. Maybe he ran into some folks that didn't have that same sort of feeling and were shitty human beings. Or maybe he met up with some strangers and they did and everything was fine, but there was a horrible accident and nobody wants to be responsible for that happening to the stranger kid that came up and was hitching a ride with him. There's a lot of possible motivations here as to why people may not be talking. And it doesn't necessarily equal it being anything to do with race, other than it may have a lot more to do with people not wanting to be accountable for whatever happened. If anything happened, if anybody even knows anything, could Nolan have gone back out into the water? He's there. He's with the girl or whatever. Maybe he can't find the girl. I'm going to go swim more with all the people out there, and gets caught in the riptide, taking a moment by himself. Oh, it's kind of nice. And then whoosh, gone. Nobody knows. Nobody caught it. There's a lot of possibilities here. But I am wondering about, you know, who else was on the island that day and what sort of footage we're going to find and what we're going to see as evidence pops up. Where do you think that's going to go?
Yeah, from what I understand, I think, what was the number, Tony? I think it's like 60 people have been interviewed is what I saw so far.
That's what I've seen, yeah.
So that's good. So we're talking a lot of people because basically from what you laid out, and I completely agree, the friends aren't giving us wobbles. We're seeing a consistent pattern of behavior from them. So I'd be focused on where we have blanks of data, which is what happened on that island after the friends left. And so you get that blanks starting to be filled in when you do the interviews. If I know we had limited cell reception here, but if there's any way to get pings, you can see what cell phones are present. You could actually identify through national security letters or subpoenas without being too intrusive. So you don't really need much to get, say, identify which cell phones are present. So you can actually identify who to interview. So that's what they're going through right now to start piecing together and filling in the blank data points that are going on that island after the friends left. Because I think that's where we're really all questioning right now.
Yeah.
Because if you keep drilling down on the friends, I think you're going to keep coming up with what you're coming up with. Not a lot of new information.
Well, I see a comment here. Some of your scenarios are far-fetched. Yeah, I mean, some of them may be. But so nobody saw this kid in distress. That's the point. Most drownings, nobody sees it happening statistically. That's a fact. And you may not like it. It may not go with the narrative how you think drownings work, but it's how they work. That's why they're drownings. Because suddenly the person's just gone and they don't see the person, especially in a riptide. So yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. It's how drownings work. It's a fact, whether it's this case or any case, most of them are not noticed. That's how it goes down. And that's the scary part of this is, and that's what I wonder too. Yeah. So let's just for a moment say,
and I'm sorry. And one second there too, when you think about it, cause the way you laid it out with all the friends there, if you actually saw a couple of video clips, people aren't paying attention to water. They're paying attention to all the chaos and all the partying and stuff going on the beach. And so if someone slips into the water, it could very potentially go unnoticed. Anyway, go to your point.
Especially if they are moving around and it's a large group of people and nobody notices there's anything wrong because there's so much chaos going on at that moment in time. But let's say, here's another scenario. Let's say nobody saw him in distress. Let's say people did see him in distress. You got 300 some people around and you're telling me that every single one of them or whatever group, let's say there's 5, 10, whatever, strangers, complete fucking strangers, see some kid out in the water. in distress. You don't think they're going to be talking about that? Mm-hmm. They had nothing to... You don't think they're going to be like, yep. My God, yes, I saw him. He was out there. He was drowning. You'd have people saying that right away. You're not going to get a bunch of strangers going, shit, we saw somebody we didn't know drowning out there. Nobody say a word.
And it all wasn't just...
What kind of scenario is that?
I know, and it's all not just one group out there. There's multiple different groups. This is a big conglomeration of people that go to this island, and so there's no way you're going to get one ringleader to silence a bunch of people. Conspiracy theories and trying to get a large number of people to comply with lying and deception and hiding agendas, it doesn't work.
So if he did drown in the public sphere where there's people, no one saw him.
Right.
I just don't see any scenario where somebody would have seen him and not said, oh my God, I saw this kid out there drowning. They're not like, well, he was a black kid, so I'm not going to report that. No, I just don't buy that at all, that nobody would say anything. now, could there be a nefarious area to this? Yes, but I don't see it being in a public sphere where everybody's seeing him drowning and just like, continue on with the party.
Right.
if he was out privately with some people, with strangers or something that he didn't know, if something went down, okay. But again, that seems like a somewhat far off scenario too, where people who are out partying one day decide to pick up the stranger and murder him. Like, hey, let's murder the black kid that came on the boat that asked for a ride back, and then let's go out to Applebee's. You know, it just doesn't make sense much either.
And so here's what's really good from an investigative standpoint, I think, is going to help everyone come to a conclusion eventually, is because when they've done approximately 60 interviews, it's a very, very tight group of people that have been there. In other words, it's not like people coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. I really think so. You go out there on a boatload of people, and if you have just, say, each boat can carry like 4 to 5 people.
Yeah.
That's a typical bow rider. It's a typical pontoon boat. It's a typical boat that goes there. And so if you only have one person on each boat being able to identify who else was on that boat, which is a high probability, you now know who to interview. And so the interviewers are now, what are they doing? They're baselining, looking for wobbles. They're looking for data. Yeah. They're looking for cell phones. They're looking for everything. They're looking for incongruencies in stories. They're looking for all the data would see, all right, here's a group that, all right, we can move on from this group. We can move on from this group. We might have a little wobble in this group, so we're going to focus in on this. And so I think that's because it is a very, I wouldn't say controlled environment, but it's not like you have thousands of people that you're trying to identify that have been coming and going. I think it's going to be a very, very much more manageable group of people they can conduct interviews with. Again, my conjecture, not being on that island, but from what we're seeing and what I'm seeing as of right now, I think that they have a really high probability of getting to the ground truth of what actually transpired. Eventually, when they get all the interviews done, they get the autopsies done, the two autopsies done, and they conduct all the interviews that are available.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm saying anything is possible, but I think we need to look at things from a logical lens on the ground and not, let's get caught up. And that's what we're trying to do. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll follow it wherever this leads.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people, it involves looking through lots and lots of documents, and if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.